leaders remove when it's them that they let them go. That's the government has accused us, and a lot of the speakers for the government have accused us of collaborating with the gangs, when it's so blatantly obvious that we wouldn't have been able to arrest to interview Charlie if they wouldn't have released him. He was in jail. He was already arrested. He's supposed to be in jail. The only reason that we were able to interview him is that the government released him. And the fact having him on camera is a living proof that Bukele dealt with the gangs. And this goes so much against narrative that he is, you know, this protector of Salvadoran people, because he has been making secret dealings behind their back, and we're just putting that to light.
Well, we only have 30 seconds, but what has been the response by the people in El Salvador to the revelations of your news site?
El Salvador is in a great state of turmoil now. One of the reasons being this publication, but there's so many problems. I just want to say before I finish that I'm here speaking because there are many others that cannot speak, because Alejandro Enriquez, who was arrested last night in El Salvador, cannot speak right now, because Roberto Jaco, who died in a prison last night after being arrested last week by the government, can't speak right now, because the Pastor Angel Perez cannot speak right now. We're
Nelson
telling a story
in
the worship safe.
We have to go, but we're going to continue this conversation in Spanish at democracynow.org. Digital editor for El Faro.
You are listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available at our website at kboo.fm. This month's Board of Directors meeting will be held on Monday, May 19th at 6 p.m. The meeting will be held online through a public video conference. A public link and phone number to attend the meeting can be found on our website at kboo.fm. Please visit our website to verify if a meeting is being held.
Support for KBOO comes from its members and Monkey Presents, welcoming Nils Fromm this Tuesday at the Schnitzer Hall. The German experimental pianist and composer combines both classical and electronic elements. Nils is touring behind his latest record and playing songs from his whole career. More info and tickets at portland5.com.
And now, your daily volunteer-produced community newscast, the KBOO Evening News.
Coming up on the KBOO Evening News, a federal judge rules the ICE arrest of a Venezuelan man in Oregon was illegal.
Oregon lawmakers grapple with a budget shortfall.
And the trade war hits sustainable businesses in Oregon.
Good evening. This is the KBOO Evening News for Wednesday, May 14th, 2025. I'm Nate Kapp.
And I'm Josh Salem. A federal judge ruled that the immigration and customs arrest of a Venezuelan man in Oregon was illegal. Diego Armando Morales Jimenez was arrested by ICE on April 9th, with Homeland Security claiming he was, quote, on a list. Federal agents say Morales Jimenez was suspected of being in the Venezuelan Tren de Aragua gang because of his tattoos. Those tattoos show his children and their names, including twins who died soon after they were born. Morales Jimenez came to the U.S. last spring, seeking asylum after being beaten and threatened for his involvement in political protests in Venezuela. Federal officials in the hearing claimed they needed to arrest him because he's from Aragua, where the gang is based. Morales Jimenez feared he would be sent to El Salvador without warning, as over 100 other Venezuelans have been. U.S. District Judge Mustafa T. Kazubash says federal agents use, quote, shoot first and ask questions later tactics against Morales Jimenez and violated his Fifth Amendment right to due process. Judge Kazubash ruled that the arrest of Morales Jimenez was illegal and restricted further action from the feds. Federal agents are barred from arresting him, detaining him without cause, or removing him from Oregon without 21 days' notice. That last part is to ensure that he could have enough time to challenge any legal action against him.
As the Oregon legislature develops its budget for the coming biennium, it needs to know how much it will have to spend. The news is out, and it's not good. $500 million less than expected. This will likely lead to new bills not going through, but should not result in deep cuts at state agencies. Oregon lawmakers have been preparing for the next two-year budget, fearing the impact of Trump's disruptive federal policies and what they mean for the state's tax revenues. Yesterday, state economists forecast Oregon to have around $500 million less to spend in the 2025-27 budget cycle than what was anticipated just 3 months ago. The revised forecast is a reflection of a national economy that is potentially crumbling because of ongoing trade tensions, and which is now growing far more slowly than many economists had anticipated. That impacts corporate and business income taxes, which are leading drivers of the state's general fund budget. Tariffs, federal job cuts, and even immigration issues are pushing the growth forecast downward. Economic growth is now forecast at 0.8% for the year rather than 2%. Oregon is highly trade dependent, so the state is more impacted than many others by trade wars. The slow growth is also likely to increase the state's unemployment rate. Oregon is expecting $162 million less in the current budget cycle than previously anticipated, and $334 million less over the next 2 years. Taxpayers can also expect a smaller kicker tax refund as a result. The kicker, which is triggered when actual revenues come in at least 2% higher than what lawmakers budgeted for, has been revised to $1.64 billion, an $87.5 million decrease.
Oregon chief economist Carl Riccadonna said that tariffs, federal job cuts, and immigration issues, quote, are levers that are pushing the growth forecast downward. The economy is a bit like a jumbo jet, and when it slows down to a certain speed, it starts to lose altitude, end quote. Making the budget process more difficult is the uncertainty over what cuts the federal government may be making. House Speaker Julie Fahey of Eugene said, quote, if they're going to make cuts to Medicaid, that is the biggest impact on not only our state budgets, but on Oregonians and their lives. Riccadonna said that since Oregon is highly dependent on trade, constantly changing federal tariff policies would play a large role in whether the state's outlook gets better or worse. Recently, the Oregon legislature's budget writers unveiled a framework that laid out what spending priorities the state might be able to fund under the previous revenue outlook released last February. That document did include some cuts. But leaders felt if the state paid for most ongoing services and set aside roughly $550 million for reserve, lawmakers would still have $987 million left over to support key investments. Potential investments included three items Governor Tina Kotek wants, including more than $800 million to bolster housing and homelessness, $246 million for the state's behavioral health system, and $200 million for education. With the new forecast, the depth and breadth of those investments may be reduced. The budget framework also does not include a massive tax proposal intended to pay for roads and bridges.
Grocery shoppers beware, the price on the shelf might not be the price you're charged at the registers. That's the finding of a recent investigation and report by The Guardian and its partners. In the investigation, secret shoppers analyzed purchases they made in Kroger and Fred Meyer stores in 9 states, including Oregon. The store's tactic is to have a sale price sticker showing on the shelf when the sale has already expired. The sale price may have affected the customer's decision to buy the item, but they're then charged the regular price at the register, on the average, $1.70 more per item. The expired discount tags encountered were, on average, about 2 weeks out of date. In a statement, Kroger said the price tag errors identified represented, quote, a few dozen examples across several years out of billions of customer transactions annually. While any error is unacceptable, the characterization of widespread pricing concerns is patently false. Kroger, the nation's second largest grocery retailer, operates more than 2,700 stores in 35 states under a variety of names, including Fred Meyer and Ralph's.
The trade war with China is impacting supply chains for many industries, and is hitting companies that provide plastic alternatives especially hard. One Oregon business owner shares his experience navigating President Donald Trump's tariffs. Isabel Charlet has more.
Tariffs are disrupting supply chains from China, making it harder for reusable alternatives to compete with single-use plastics. Jeffrey Delkin is the president of Bamboo, an Oregon-based company that has been making plastic-free home goods for 20 years. He says the Trump administration's 145% tariffs forced the company to lay off their staff in China and make their U.S. staff part-time. Though Chinese tariffs will now drop to 30% for 90 days, Delkin notes this is still a huge jump from the usual 3.5%. He fears the tariff roller coaster threatens the company's future as well as the market for plastic alternatives.
Unfortunately, this is a time where we need more small, right-minded, responsibly operated businesses, and the current conditions are not helping.
Data shows even before the trade war, plastic products face much lower tariffs than their alternatives. This keeps plastic prices low and makes it harder for alternatives to compete. Delkin adds since the oil industry receives large government subsidies, plastic producers are better able to absorb extra costs. Research shows plastics contain harmful chemicals that leach into food, water, and the environment. Emissions created during plastic production also contribute to climate change. Delkin says the public is still learning about the impacts of microplastics on overall health, adding over 90% of the plastic that's produced ends up in landfills.
It's that kind of stark reality that encouraged us to really promote renewable materials.
The plastic market continues to grow despite these harmful impacts. In 2020, about 370 million tons of plastic were traded, valued at $1.2 trillion. I'm Isabel Charlet, Oregon News Service.
Humanities groups are pushing back on efforts by President Donald Trump to dismantle the National Endowment for the Humanities. Zimone Perez has more in Virginia.
Supporters of the National Endowment for the Humanities say cuts to the agency by President Donald Trump hurt Americans' access to art and culture and breaks the law. In April, the Department of Government Efficiency terminated grants to individual recipients and 56 state and territory humanities councils, including Virginia Humanities. DOGE also fired 65% of the endowment's staff. A group of three humanities organizations, including the Modern Language Association, filed a lawsuit to stop the Trump administration's move. Virginia Humanities receives more than 20% of its funding from the endowment and had its operating budget slashed by DOGE. Paula Krebs with the Modern Language Association says the lawsuit is meant to restore the NEH to its original legally binding mission.
We're aiming to roll back the effects of the DOGE cuts and the DOGE interference in the operations of the NEH and return the NEH to the functions that Congress has statutorily required it to serve.
Endowment officials announced the agency is cutting grants that aren't in alignment with the administration's priorities, including those that promote diversity, equity, and inclusion. The NEH said it is now working to promote the United States' 250th birthday and American exceptionalism. Cuts to state councils from the NEH total more than $65 million and have resulted in the cancellation of more than 1,400 open grants, including $2 million for Virginia Humanities. Krebs says the NEH is not just for authors, playwrights, or filmmakers. It's important for all Americans.
And how we understand our literature, our film, our history, our art, all of that is the humanities. We all live that every day, and the government's investment in that is an investment in us being Americans who understand the culture in which we live.
The Trump administration's 2026 budget proposal calls for the elimination of the endowment. I'm Zimone Perez, Virginia News Connection.
States consider their own versions of the Federal Voting Rights Act. Justice Department attorneys shift their focus from voting rights to voter fraud. And state legislatures urge the Supreme Court to reverse its decision legalizing same-sex marriage. With those stories and more, it's Catherine Carley with 2025 Talks.
Welcome to 2025 Talks, where we're following our democracy in historic times.
This bill is our commitment to Coloradans. It is our commitment to the sanctity of voting, and it is our commitment to accountability.
Colorado State Representative Jennifer Bacon says a new state-level version of the Federal Voting Rights Act will enshrine voter protections she fears could soon be erased. New York and Washington have already passed their own versions of the law, and several more are considering it. Many cite one of President Donald Trump's recent executive orders, which claims sole authority to regulate federal elections. That order, like others, is being challenged in court. Federal firings have cut the number of Justice Department lawyers protecting voting rights from 30 down to 3, according to one outside count. A new mission statement for DOJ's voting rights section shifts the focus to targeting voter fraud. House lawmakers are now debating a massive tax and budget bill. It would cut taxes for all brackets, benefiting top earners and corporations the most. But Republican Missouri Congressman Jason Smith says working families will see some relief.
The 2017 Trump tax cuts gave a boost to workers. The new 2025 Trump tax cuts will provide even more tax relief by delivering on President Trump's promise to hardworking Americans.
The current House text would raise the debt limit by $4 trillion. It includes hundreds of billions for immigrant sweeps and detention and for increased defense spending. A contentious proposal to slash Medicaid by nearly $900 billion to pay for the tax cuts would strip coverage for more than 8 million Americans. Private universities would also face a hefty new tax on their endowments, and a separate provision would end the tax-exempt status of nonprofits the State Department says support terrorism. Leah Holland with the digital rights group Fight for the Future says the language is vague enough to target any group opposing Trump's agenda.
Every environmental, racial justice, LGBTQ+, gender justice, immigration justice, and any anti-genocide organization throughout the country may be on the chopping block.
Legislation introduced in several states urges the Supreme Court to reconsider Obergefell versus Hodges, the 2015 decision which legalized same-sex marriage. Paul Collins, a legal studies professor at the University of Massachusetts Amherst, calls it part of a broader attack on LGBTQ+ rights.
We have arguably the most conservative Supreme Court in American history, and it's already sent signals to us that it's willing to revisit even popular precedents.
In the court's 2022 decision to overturn Roe v. Wade and remove the constitutional right to an abortion, Justice Clarence Thomas wrote a concurring opinion saying the court should use the same logic to overturn same-sex marriage. I'm Catherine Carley for Pacifica Network and Public News Service. Find our trust indicators at publicnewsservice.org.
You're listening to the KBOO Evening News. Stay tuned after this newscast for an in-depth interview with Shisal Hatta, artist and creative director of the Portland Assembly Center Project, Portland Assembly Center Project, about the 10th annual Vanport Mosaic Festival starting this week. At 6, it's Radio Zine. At 7, Hard Knock Radio. Tonight's weather will be cloudy with an overnight low of 49 degrees. Tomorrow's weather will be cloudy with a 40% chance of rain and a daytime high of 59 degrees. Today in history, in 1998, American journalist and conservationist Marjorie Stoneman Douglas died at 108 years old. She was known for her staunch defense of the Everglades against efforts to drain it and develop the land. The quote of the day is from former U.S. Secretary of the Interior Carl Schurz, who said, quote, "Ideals are like stars. You will not succeed in touching them with your hands, but like the seafaring man on the desert of waters, you choose them as your guides, and following them, you will reach your destiny."
The Line 5 Enbridge pipeline in Wisconsin is being challenged by local tribes, but in a recent hearing, federal officials said they're unconvinced the project would harm the water quality. With that story and more, it's Antonia Gonzalez with National Native News.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. Federal regulators said in a hearing Tuesday that data does not support a Wisconsin tribe's claims that a pipeline project will violate its water quality standards. As Danielle Kading reports, the Bad River Band of Lake Superior Chippewa says Canadian energy firm Enbridge is underestimating impacts from its Line 5 reroute.
Enbridge wants to reroute the oil and gas pipeline after Bad River sued to shut down and remove Line 5 from its lands. The U.S. Army Corps of Engineers held a hearing over the tribe's objection to permitting the project under the Clean Water Act. The Environmental Protection Agency says Bad River didn't submit data or studies that show water quality violations would occur. But Bad River Tribal Chair Robert Blanchard says permitting the project would cause irreparable harm.
Whatever happens upstream from our reservation will affect the waters that we and many others depend on for survival.
Enbridge's environmental projects manager, Joe McGaver, disputes that.
The Line 5 project will not impact Bad River's water quality standards. We designed the project for that to be the end result.
The tribe says the reroute would have a negative impact by filling wetlands, blasting bedrock, and disrupting groundwater flows. Enbridge and its consultants say wetland impacts will be temporary and blasting won't affect groundwater or nearby wells. For National Native News, I'm Danielle Kading.
And a disclosure, Enbridge supports this program. The federal government may soon return a traditional subsistence site connected to Douglas Island in southeast Alaska to its original tribal owners. KTOO's Clarice Larson reports.
Mayflower Island is a small, 3-acre island adjacent to Douglas Harbor in Sandy Beach. It's near the site of the former Douglas Indian Village, which Douglas's city government burned down in 1962. The city and borough of Juneau formally apologized for the burning last fall. At a Juneau Assembly Lands Housing and Economic Development meeting last week, members gave initial approval for a plan that would acquire the island from the federal government and then give it to Douglas Indian Association. DIA officials did not respond to KTOO for a request for comment. Dan Blydorn is the city's land and resource manager. He says this is a plan that's been years in the making.
This is on the list of 2025 Assembly Goals for Community Wellness and Public Safety. The goal states, support Douglas Indian Association's efforts to acquire Mayflower Island.
The island once served as a traditional subsistence site and yielded a herring run and spawn used by the Douglas Indian Village. The DIA is currently in the process of building a cultural learning center near the former site of the village. According to a spokesperson for the U.S. Bureau of Land Management, the property has been under the federal government's stewardship since 1890. The island was originally reserved for the U.S. Navy to use as a naval station. But in 1948, it was transferred to the Federal Bureau of Mines, which constructed a mineral laboratory on the site to process ore samples for research. The BLM took over the property in 1996 when Congress closed the Bureau of Mines. The U.S. Coast Guard also used the site under an agreement with the BLM, but that ended in 2023. Blydorn says the actual property transfer is likely still a few years out, but the Juneau Assembly's approval is the next step in moving that process along. The resolution would still need to come before the Assembly for final approval. In Juneau, I'm Clarice Larson.
The U.S. Senate Committee on Indian Affairs is holding a hearing Wednesday on public health and social services for Native Americans. The hearing will examine federal programs serving Native Americans across the Department of Health and Human Services. The hearing comes as the committee's leaders, Senators Lisa Murkowski and Brian Schatz, recently sent a letter to Health Secretary Robert F. Kennedy Jr., raising concerns about potential impacts on Native communities with Trump administration workforce reductions and funding cuts. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
A new report from the Ohio River Valley Institute warns that Appalachian gas production is slowing as the cost to clean up old oil and gas wells is soaring. The region faces nearly $40 billion in cleanup costs, but companies have only set aside about $115 million. The report calls for major policy reforms to make sure the oil and gas industry covers the bill. Danielle Smith has more in Pennsylvania.
A new report says the oil and gas industry, not taxpayers, should cover the cost of plugging up hundreds of thousands of abandoned oil wells across Appalachia. Plugging wells in Pennsylvania, Ohio, and West Virginia could cost nearly $40 billion, with most of the burden coming from shale wells. Report co-author Dwayne Purvis says he analyzed the Ohio River Valley along with other states, finding that old shale wells are often unable to fund their own decommissioning.
Of course, there are some shale wells that are getting older and depleting, producing at slower rates, and even some that are shut in or marginal. What we did in this study that was new for the first time was to offer ideas on how financial assurance reform can address this disparity.
Purvis points out there are currently over 265,000 unplugged non-shell wells across the three states, too, many of which also pose environmental risks. He adds hundreds of thousands more were plugged decades ago, but often to outdated standards, meaning they may still leak. Purvis says the Inflation Reduction Act and bipartisan infrastructure law jump-started efforts to plug oil wells, but the funding was never meant to be permanent. He says operators should pay for decommissioning the wells, but many can't afford to do it.
So the next best option is what we've offered, that it needs to come from, the money for decommissioning needs to come from other companies in the oil and gas business who do have the income necessary to cover the liabilities of the industry as a whole in order to protect the public.
According to the report in the three states studied, Purvis' proposal would directly increase oil and gas employment by an estimated 32% and create over 19,000 new jobs in total. I'm Danielle Smith, Keystone State News Connection.
Scientists are tracking climate change on a remote Andes mountain peak. What they learn could help communities that depend on mountain snowmelt. Dr. Anthony Leiswitz has more on the story with Climate Connections.
I'm Dr. Anthony Leiswitz, and this is Climate Connections. In February, an international team of climbers and scientists summited the highest mountain in the Western Hemisphere, Aconcagua in Argentina. After weeks of climbing and camping in extreme rocky terrain along the ascent, Tom Matthews of King's College London and his team reached the summit. They took in jaw-dropping views of the Andes.
The landscape is beautiful. It's exceptionally barren. It's very, very dry, but also stunning.
And then they got to work, installing a weather observation station on the snowy, rocky peak. The station, which is one of five they installed on the mountain, measures temperature, precipitation, and other variables. The data will help researchers understand how the warming climate is affecting snowpack and the rate of glacial melt on Aconcagua. Both processes affect communities far beyond the remote mountaintop. Mountain ice and snowpack act as a reservoir, providing much-needed water to downstream communities as they slowly melt over the spring and summer.
As the climate changes, the way that reservoir behaves is changing, and therefore everything downstream is potentially at risk. And we really need to understand how. You know, the details matter, and that's what work like this is about.
Climate Connections is produced by the Yale Center for Environmental Communication. To learn more about climate change, visit climateconnections.org.
Now we go to The Point Puzzle, a weekly radio brain teaser created by Pearl Stark at KPOV Bend. This week's puzzle involves wordplay and a common phrase.
It's time for the puzzle.
Last week, I asked for a word for someone being honored and also what they might be honored with. There were a number of creative answers to this puzzle, including Pearl, who might have been given a pearl, and knights, who might be honored by knighthood. And my intended answer was mums, who might have been given some mums. Our winner this week is Sarah Bailey, who listens to WUTC in Chattanooga, Tennessee. And I hope all of you mums out there had a happy Mother's Day.
Things went well to the very last drop, on your lap with a great big plop. Use a napkin, not your mom. Use a napkin, not your mom. Use a napkin, not your mom.
For the new puzzle, I'm looking for a common five-word phrase implying someone is incorrect. The first four letters of the phrase form a noun that is an attribute of the last word in the phrase. So again, send me a common five-word phrase implying someone is incorrect. The first four letters form a noun that is part of the last word in the phrase. When you have an answer, send your name, your answer, and the station on which you hear the puzzle to puzzle@kpov.org. I'll select one winner from among any answers received by this Saturday.
It's all wrong, all wrong, all wrong.
This has been Pearl Stark with your Point Puzzle for the week of May 12th. The Point Puzzle is produced at KPOV, High Desert Community Radio.
KBOO News poet Dan Raphael wants to make America not for sale again.
Since World War II, this has been a world where America was buying. Now with Donnie, America is for sale. Clearly no longer a democracy, but a business. Donnie less a president and the huckster in chief. Trump selling access to dinner in the White House. Enough wealthy fools out there thinking Trump makes national policy. Bitcoin's just a higher price lottery ticket. China's a business too, but their bait has hooks. You want more? Where else you gonna get it? Like a big jet plane from Qatar, first one's free. Then what you got to trade that maybe folks thought wasn't for sale? As if the Dow Jones or NASDAQ mean anything to most of us, yet the numbers keep being chanted as if showing God's favor or disappointment. Don't invest in stocks, but in people, those close to you in relationship, including yourself, as well as neighbors. This interest will compound and transform in ways obvious and surprising, restoring America one conversation at a time. For Poetic Justice, this is Dan Raphael.
You're listening to the KBOO Evening News for Wednesday, May 14th, 2025. This is a volunteer-produced newscast, and we encourage your participation. Call or text us with your breaking news stories and tips at 971-245-2158. Our production team for tonight's newscast includes Dan Raphael and Josh Salem. The producer is Althea Billings, and our engineer is Ray Bodwell. Special thanks to Isabel Charlet, Antonia Gonzalez, Catherine Carley, Zimone Perez, Pearl Stark, and Danielle Smith. The director of the evening news is Althea the Dance Machine Billings. A podcast of the newscast is available on our website at kboo.fm/eveningnews. You are listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282 BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220 HR Hood River on 91.9 FM. I'm Nate Kapp.
And I'm Josh Salem. All of our KBOO programs, including the evening news, are supported by our members. If you would like to become a member and support our programming, you can go to kboo.fm/give or text KBOO to 44321. Stay tuned now for KBOO News in Depth.